And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick will join us in just a moment. He was trying to navigate through East Nashville, as you can imagine. A little bit difficult these days because of what happened Monday night slash early Tuesday morning. Chase McCabe.
Hello.
That's him. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Gentlemen, how we doing?
You know what? We're good. We're good. It's a sunny day. Got a little rest. So I'm ready to go. Ready to talk to the people, with the people. And it's going to be good.
We do have some phones today. So an improvement from yesterday. So we can talk to more people.
We do. Today. Now you have to do things a little differently, which we will help you along with throughout the show.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, we, you know, kudos to our engineering staff for working on this throughout the night and getting us some phones.
We are very, very happy about that, no doubt. Tough one in Minnesota last night. We'll talk to Chris Mason at 1 o'clock, our weekly chat with him. But, you know, we talked about it Monday night in postgame at Barrel House. Okay, John Hines, head coach, has strong words for his team. Didn't like their performance, especially the third period against Edmonton. How would they respond? Now we've known how they respond, or how they responded. And your thoughts are?
All right.
I'm ready for this.
I needed to stretch.
Wow.
What was it that the captain, Roman Josi, said
after
the game? What did he say they needed to do?
Come out mad.
Darren McFarland, my good friend and co-host.
PO'd for greatness.
Great way to describe it. You were here. You watched that game. You've covered this team for a long time. That first period, did that look like a team that came out mad?
I would say that was not the period they were looking for.
No, it wasn't.
At the first 3 minutes, so that was good.
Yeah.
First four minutes.
Yep. But that wasn't a team that came out mad.
Until the goal happened.
No. And then they were down 2-0 at the end of the first. That's where it was. And, oh, by the way, Kevin Fiala, he scored again. I don't know if anybody has been sleeping under a rock, but he's been pretty good lately. And he scored again. So, down 2-0 at the end of the first. That was not the period that they were looking for. It simply wasn't. That was not the start. And I don't want to hear, oh, it's a back-to-back. I don't want to hear that. Everybody knew that going in. You got beat 8-3 the night before when you were tied at 3-0 going into the third period.
So I'm sensing from the vibe I'm getting right now that you're not pleased.
No, I'm not. And
with last night.
I'm not.
Is that a fair assessment?
No, I'm not pleased. I'm not
That's
pleased.
The vibe I'm picking up, Darren.
Willie just got here and we seem to be on the same page.
Willie started walking in the door and he heard me. He's like, you know what?
I'll be back at 10:15.
Take the day.
Before I even
what's Charlie coming on?
Before I even could hear Chase, that like the hair was standing up on the back of my neck.
Well, he started stretching. I was like, so Chase, what did you think? You know, what we talked about it. What would the response be? What did you think? He started stretching. I was like, wait a minute. You need to stretch before you give this answer?
I did.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Well, I learned.
Look, in you know, the second period, okay, you like the response. It's fine. No goals scored. A little back and forth. Both teams, you know, were giving it to each other. Still no goals. Then you get into the third period. They score again. Zach Parise. Now it's 3-0. Not good.
That was a bad bounce.
Not good. Yeah, it was a bad bounce, but still, you're down 3-0 at this point. And then, you know, here comes the rally. Here comes the fight in Preds and score on the power play, which they've needed to do. They have struggled mightily on the power play. Craig Smith, Mr. Reliable, but that's as close
which
as they're going to
get.
Sweet
play, by the way.
It was.
Knocked it down, and did that puck even hit the ice?
I don't know.
I wondered if it even hit the ice,
was
or did
good?
He hit that in the air.
Yeah, it's like, was it a punt or was it a drop kick? Like,
I think, you know, it was more of a drop kick.
I think it was a drop kick.
What I felt like.
As soon as the puck hits the ice, ba boom.
Yeah.
That's how I thought it was. But
so the point is, and why I'm bringing the passion, because somebody told me that they don't like my passion. I need to bring more passion. Somebody told me that the other day.
Really?
I need to bring the passion.
Well, that person's a smart person.
So I am bringing the passion, Coach. And I am, look, I'm not pleased. You look at the standings right now. Guess what? They're out of the playoffs. They've dropped back out. And there's a little column on the far right-hand side that says STRK, which means streak, L3 next to the Preds. Yeah. They've lost three in a row. Mm-hmm. And how many times did we talk about this, that you can't do the whole win a couple, lose a couple, win a couple, lose a couple? Well, they won three, they lost three.
We've been talking about, I can give you the number of games. We've been talking about that.
Yeah.
66.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about that for 66 games.
How did I do that so quickly? I just went right through the schedule.
That's good. That's good.
Well, it's 50, 65, 66. 66.
That's good. Did you have Maddox help you with that last night? Like, hey, Chase is going to bring this up tomorrow. I'm going to be ready for him.
Let's count the games.
Let's count the games. But you see what I'm saying? Like, in 5-4-1 in their last 10, I mean, that's... It's a 500 hockey team.
It's the season, to your point.
And, you know, I know what you're going to say with what I'm about to say. Look, that's...
Which means there's a three-game winning streak coming starting tomorrow.
Probably. But that's not a playoff team. They were playing like a playoff team.
We're back there. We've gone back.
This is not a waffle. This is not a waffle. I'm just pointing this out.
Willie, did you pass the butter, please? Pass it. And the syrup over there by your left hand.
Man, there's something I want to say, but I'm not going to. But, look, now you've thrown me off. They were playing much better, and I think anybody in that room would tell you that they were playing much better. They were starting to show signs and play like a playoff team. Well, now we're back. Now we've gone on the three-game losing streak. And so they're out right now.
Now, well, there was a little bit of a shift in the standings last night.
There was a big shift.
Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be several shifts between now and April the 4th. It's going to happen. Got to ride the waves.
What were your thoughts? You were there.
Well, it wasn't good. I think what I see is during these three games that they've lost, they've played three teams that I thought all played really good games. I don't think they ran up against anybody that struggled. We talked about it when they beat Ottawa and they beat Columbus. They won the games, but you knew they were going to have to play better to have success against teams that ultimately are going to make the playoffs and do well in the playoffs. They have to play at a higher level. I thought they did that for the most part in the win against the Flames. But they just weren't quite good enough in any of these last three games. You know, I think they all would tell you they did some good things in parts of the games. I think the Edmonton game, I was listening to you guys after the game, you know, kind of break down John Hines' thing. And his point was, even when it was 3-3 in the second period where they came from behind, he still never felt great about how they were playing. You know, they didn't really have the level that they needed. And Edmonton right now is making a push. They're a good team, right? They're starting to click.
Won in Dallas last night.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
They're tied for top of the Pacific.
Minnesota's playing good hockey right now. Right? Kevin Fiala is playing as well as anybody in the league right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not named McDavid or Draisaitl.
23 points in the last 15 games.
He's had five straight multi-point games. So that play he makes last night undefendable.
No player in Minnesota Wild history has done what he's done in this five-game stretch. Oh, by the way, there's only two other players in the league that have ever done this. Do you know who that is?
No.
Draisaitl and Kucherov.
Yeah.
You know, when they both have had like 200-point seasons? That's what kind of role he's on right now. He's in the company of those guys, of five consecutive games of multi-points.
So Minnesota is playing well. The Predators... these last three games, I don't know what it is. They're just not finishing when they have the look. They're getting the looks, but they're not playing with the confidence. Like Kevin Fiala's words last night after the game were, you know, how are we making all these plays? Like that play around Ryan Ellis was absolutely perfect. You know, not many guys can make that play. And the way UC Saros is playing, he had to make a perfect shot, and he did. Now, did the Predators turn it over? They had a chance to put the puck in deep, to where they can't turn it around into a two-on-one. That's the mistake that the Predators made there, right? But over the course of the game, you're going to make mistakes. Kevin Fiala made the play. The Predators had opportunities to make plays. Their playmakers just aren't connecting right now. Nobody is jumping up and making the big play at the key time. And so they've sagged back. Like when they were winning, they were making just enough plays, right? It's not like they're booming with 4 or 5 goals, you know, explosive offense. They're finding ways to win. But we were saying while that was going on, when they were 10-4-1, or is that what it was? I think 10-4-1.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That they're finding ways to win, but there's another level they've got to reach. And so you see what happens there, right? They take a step back. They play 3 teams that are playing at a really good level, and they fall short.
Well, you said you were listening Monday night to us, and the thing that jumped out to me is when the Edmonton reporter, and I brought this up again yesterday, and I brought it up that night. I took
that was great
heed to what John Hines said. I mean, he went out of his way to basically, when asked about Leon Draisaitl, and, oh, by the way, wrap Connor McDavid into the answer, even though he wasn't asked about Connor McDavid. But I think it was a point to say, see, look, that's what their star players do in big moments. And the third period, who took over the game? Those two. I mean, especially Draisaitl. I mean, my goodness. Both of them had 5 points in the game. And I think it was yet again him sending the message of, well, you're getting paid to be a star. You need to be a star. I mean, look what their stars did. And, you know, I mean, John Hines had a lot of things. Why were we looking for an easy game? I thought that was interesting. You know, he was, you know, referencing that, and they got what they deserved. And just, I don't know, there were a lot of things you can tell that John Hines is continuing to try to figure out what buttons to push to get his highest paid players. I mean, right now, just to put this in perspective, Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson, and Matt Duchene have less points combined than Leon Draisaitl. I mean, just let that soak in for a minute. That's over $20 million in payroll. Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson have less points combined than Leon Draisaitl. And I think the point of this is not to say, why aren't these guys Leon Draisaitl or Connor McDavid? Nobody's asking them to be that. There can be some middle ground, right? It's like there's this far extreme of to the left of their points, and then the far extreme to the right, which is Draisaitl's points, and there could be something in between. Like if they were all around 50-something points on the season, right? And you could add them all up, and they have 162 points combined between the three of them, right? But they have 100 points combined, the three of them. Leon Draisaitl has 108, I think, on the season. I mean, I think that goes to what some of what John Hines is saying is, how do you expect to get this done if that's over $20 million in payroll wrapped up in those three guys, and those three guys alone can't even match or beat the total of one guy for Edmonton?
Well, I thought his point was, take away just the actual points. It's like when this time of the year is when your best players really start playing their, at their best level, right? They're driving the bus. And other than Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi, who I thought were really good again last night, I thought there were some tic-tac calls against the Predators.
I didn't like a couple calls that prevented them
maybe from really grabbing the momentum. I thought from about the halfway point. Now,
Granlund,
of course,
and Ellis
Chase's point is well taken, right? You're down 2-0 and you're being outshot 20-7. How did it get there, right? Why is it there? But once it got there, they kill off the two in a row. They went on a run. They from there on outshot them something like, I don't know what it ended up, 30 to 15, 30 to 12, something like that, and still gave up like 4 more power plays for the Wild. So they started really controlling the play. But somewhere in there, you got to make the plays. Yeah. Somewhere you got to have a tic-tac-toe, boom, nothing they can do, right? They didn't get a bounce. Stalock made the saves. Couldn't quite get closer.
So we'll come back and revisit this conversation. But next up, Charlie Casserly from NFL Network, former NFL GM. We talk to Charlie next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, the Underwear Olympics has wrapped up in Indianapolis. Combine back here on Darren Donick and Chase. We talked to former general manager in the league, now does great work on NFL Network. And Elijah, I need help. I cannot pull up our next guest, Charlie Casserly. Uh-oh. That's not good. Charlie, Hello? You there?
We're here.
Hold on. Let's put him on hold, Elijah.
Still having some phone issues.
Okay, there we go. Charlie, you there?
I'm here.
Sorry about that. Uh-oh.
That's okay. I heard you. You didn't hear me.
Well, we obviously had some really bad storms on Monday.
Oh, yeah. It's a horrible thing.
And
horrible.
So we've lost our phones, and so we're kind of doing a little makeshift, and I don't know. Try another line, Elijah, or something. Sorry about that. We didn't have phones yesterday at all.
I heard about that.
And so
I was wanting you guys to call me, but apparently you couldn't.
No,
you
couldn't. Yeah. We were unable to talk to anybody via the telephone. And so this is and they're not back. This is kind of the solution to not having phones. And so this is the first time we've tried it, and that's what we just got.
Apparently.
I don't know why it was ringing, because we weren't dialing anyone, so I'm not sure.
Well, I know there's a lot of people. I came from East Nashville. I got the chance to just see it with my own eyes for the first time coming home last night and this morning. There's some people working like dogs over there.
Yeah.
I love to see what they're trying to do to start this process. It's going to be a marathon getting everything put back together, but I love all the effort and how people have come together.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's give it a try again. Charlie Casterly is on the line with us. Charlie, how you doing?
Hey, good morning. More importantly, how are you guys doing?
Well, we were just talking about it. It's obviously our city has been hit very hard from the tornadoes late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, and we're just trying to recover and rebuild and help out and, you know, just do our part. It was I don't think any of us really knew how bad it was truly going to be until we all woke up Tuesday morning and went, whoa.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, all of us throughout the country are praying for you guys.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for your patience on the phones. That was today is the first day we've had phones on the show. We've been had them knocked out since the storm. So I do want to ask you, because you've been in those rooms, you've had to make those picks, and we always want to know, because we, you know, over the years and now that it's on prime time, obviously people, the public, the media, everybody is learning more than they've ever known about the combines, right? It used to be more of a just kind of a private party, as you know, but it's not the case anymore. So when we make a big deal about hand size or the 40 time or all the drills that people get excited about, I truly want to know from you, like, which one should we be paying really close attention to?
Well, first of all, let me give you the bigger picture. The combine is just part of the process. What it is an evaluation in the spring where you fine-tune your ratings on the players. You're more interested in these things from the combine. One is the physicals. That was the reason the combine was started, obviously. You're not going to see that on television. The 40 time, because most of these players, we don't have a 40 time on, and it's kind of a measuring point for speed. Now, the asterisk there is when you watch the tape, you put down a play speed. The guy runs faster or slower, then you go back and you want to redo. You may want to, it's a slower time, you go back and retime him. If it's faster, then you go back and relook at the tape and say, well, maybe did I evaluate him wrong? So from a television point of view, the 40 time and then the drill work. Those are the two things that I would concentrate on if I'm watching. Now, again, sometimes these guys train for the 40 and they'll run faster than they really are. And that's something, you know, as a scout, you have to make a decision. You're watching at home, you're not going to know whether that 40 time is faster than we thought or not.
Why do you think that the players are asked to do something that's not realistic? That's not what they do on Sundays. In other words, what I'm asking is, I kid, and we all kid, it's not like I've come up with this phrase, the underwear party, underwear Olympics, whatever. They're out there running around, and you know, that's not how Sundays or, you know, on game day, you got pads. It's a difference. Why not have them suit up in a helmet and just like they're going to see on game days? Why run around in shorts and a T-shirt or no shirt?
Well, I think we'd probably like them to put some pads on and do some stuff, but I don't think that's realistic to get the players to do that, okay?
Hmm.
And they're not going to agree to that. So,
yeah.
But what you're right from this point of view. 90%, to just use a number, of the grade is already determined. You're fine-tuning things. You have to have a physical. That's why this thing was started, to have an economic way to get 330 physicals, bring everybody wins, one spot, split the cost. And when they got this, well, why don't we time them? Why don't we work them out? Why don't we interview them? Okay, why don't we do psychological testing? We've got them here. So all of those other things come after the main thing of why they're there. Now, you want to know how fast a guy is. So, you know, historically we've done it without pads, so we have things we can measure there. You know, criteria based on what people have done in the past. The drill work is done to separate them athletically. For example, when you have, like, for example, you guys may need, you probably need a tackle. Conklin probably, you know, signed someplace else, we'll say. All right, so we're sitting there, and the top four tackles probably gone by you, but Jedrick Willis of Alabama, Tristan Wirfs of Iowa, Andrew Thomas of Georgia, and Micah Becton from Louisville. Okay, so we all got them graded. I've got three of these guys graded in the historically maybe top 10 picks. Okay, so I've watched the tape on them. Now I want to see them move athletically, just, you know, to see what is the difference between them, because you've all got them rated in that same range. So let's move them athletically. Example, Willis from Alabama, he plays right tackle. Can he play left tackle? I can't find that unless I work him out. So you're fine-tuning things at this point in time is what you're doing. And it's basically putting them through the drills. For example, a receiver. Some of these receivers don't run full routes. In other words, a full route tree. I want the guy to run all the different routes, see how he does. That's how I'm going to have to separate guys. So you're not moving guys radically in the draft. You're fine-tuning your ratings is what you're doing in the spring.
Charlie Casserly is with us. So, Charlie, for your purposes and your role on television, do you evaluate players today the same way you did when you were a GM? How has that evolved from your eyes?
The evaluation hasn't changed. Well, when I look at them, what's changed is the I don't want to say the technical part in the sense we can get the tape immediately now. You know, there was a time where when I started, which was 40-some years ago, we had no library of game film on college players. None. Okay? Now you have a tremendous library that you can get instantly, so therefore you can do a better job evaluating players because you have more access to what they do. Everybody has the same access. So everybody's equal in that point. But as far as, like, grading them on the tape, there's no difference. I use the system I used when I was in the league, and basically there is really no difference when you evaluate players now. There might be better players, but maybe faster, but you're still evaluating the same criteria. You look at a quarterback and what's his release, what's his accuracy, what's his judgment, what's his arm strength, what's his escapability. Those are the characteristics I look at.
You mentioned the puzzle that John Robinson is trying to piece together now, especially with the three key players, and you can add a fourth in Logan Ryan, but Jack Conklin, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry. It's tricky. You've got the tags that you can use, but you mentioned it. It looks like Jack Conklin has got some serious interest from the outside. It's been put out there for one reason or another. Do you think it's a viable strategy to allow Conklin to just take the big money, use your resources elsewhere, and then draft a replacement for him in the first round?
Well, I think they would like to keep him. But it may get to a point where people are going to blow them out, and if that's the case, you know, you have to just make your cap decisions, and I can't make them for them because I don't know it. But you're going to pay Henry, you're going to pay Tannehill, and you're going to pay Conklin. Can you afford to do all these things now and then go forward with it? That's really the question they have to answer. It's an economical question, but they may be faced with having to let him go. So.
Charlie Casserly.
They're the only ones that can answer the economics, is what I'm saying.
Charlie Casserly is with us from the NFL Network. So from your point of view as a former GM, you just mentioned that the Titans, you know, you got to pay Tannehill, you got to pay Henry and all that. But you know that your head coach has a good relationship with a quarterback that is poised to be a free agent in Tom Brady. So you know that there is a chance that that could possibly happen. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. How do you go about attacking that? Because if you don't tag Tannehill or you don't get a deal done before free agency, you're risking possibly losing both, and then all of a sudden you don't have either one.
You got to have some kind of clue before you have to make those decisions. And, you know, whether it's legal or not, you have to have a clue. You got to know. You can't sit there and go into the thing blind with the hope you get Brady. So you have to have some assurance from Brady's camp that this is going to happen.
Do you feel like that Tom Brady, this whole thing is real, that he actually is going to leave New England?
You know, I have no feel. I haven't asked anybody about it. They've kept it very quiet. I still, my gut is he'll be back there, but that's only a guess. I really have no idea on it. Now, you know, New England has something to say with this, too. You know, they're not, I guarantee you they're not sitting there doing nothing. I guarantee you they have a plan to go on day one if he hesitates. So you have to. You got to be prepared. So, but that's Tennessee to me. You'd have to, if I'm another team, I have to make a decision on Tannehill or whoever I've got a quarterback, I got to know right away. I got to have an answer before it starts. So,
if you're the Titans, do you consider at some point in this draft, knowing what's available, and you have several needs that you need to fill, but do you consider trying to draft a quarterback and develop and make that your guy of the future?
If we if I have Brady, the answer is yes. If I have Tannehill, the answer is no. I certainly would take a quarterback, but it would probably be later in the draft, which would be a lower percentage that the guy will develop. But I would take somebody. But Tannehill is, you know, young enough that I'm going to ride that for a while.
We all know the quarterback position is so incredibly important, but I'm not envious of a general manager's job to actually figure out how they translate from college, which is even tougher today because of the way college football is played, and can it translate to Sundays in the NFL? How difficult is it to, you know, if there's a lot of things you like, but, you know, the big thing is, can they actually process things at the highest level? Can they actually make the throws? I just like to know what's that like in a room trying to figure out if that pick is worthy enough, because you know when it comes to the quarterback position, you've got to get it right.
Well, you can go study percentages. There's a lot of ones that don't work out, okay? So that just bears to your question of why you're asking. It's a difficult situation. I think one of the keys is your coaching staff. They have to be adaptable. And they have to understand that you have limited time with these guys, and you're going to have to adapt to more what they do than what you want to do. So know your coaching staff. That's number one. As far as the mental part, we had a mental test that had no reading or writing in it, which told us a lot about the mental ability. You have to have some way of judging it. I don't know that the most accurate way is a coach putting them on the board and asking them questions. Okay. I don't know if that is. I've had mixed results with that when I was in my career. And this is good coaches, too. The single most important thing you got to figure out is the guy's desire to learn. You know what he did in college. You'll know whether he could handle that offense there. You've got to, you know, you're going to have X test that's going to tell you what his mental is, whatever test you use. But what is his desire to learn? That's the key. If he's got a burning desire to learn, then you can work with the guy. And how do you figure that out? Obviously you talk to the coaches, you talk to the people where he is, some of your testing can tell us that. And then your interview, which comes down to your gut reaction of spending time with him and just seeing what kind of personality he has as to the learning part of it. It's not easy to find that part out, but that's really the key, is this guy's desire to learn.
Last thing quickly, since you were there, was there anybody that, it's kind of a loaded question, but you take it however you want, anybody that really stood out to you in Indianapolis, somebody that really grabbed your attention?
Well, there's a lot of them. There's 300 players, okay? So, but I'll give you an answer here. Isaiah Simmons from Clemson. Now, he didn't do drills, but he ran in the 4.3s, which to me, this guy is a honey badger, okay? Tyrann Mathieu, multiple position guy.
Okay.
They're a little bit different because this guy can play linebacker in a 4.3. He's a will linebacker. He can play linebacker in a nickel and cover. I think he can play safety. I know he can play safety. And he actually lined up at nickel corner. The time gets me interested at the nickel corner, giving him another position of flexibility.
Interesting. Hey, thank you so much for the visit. We really appreciate it. We always like talking to you. And we'll do it again down the road.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, that is Charlie Casserly from NFL Network, former NFL GM. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Quite the gesture on display last night in Minnesota as Craig Leopold and his family ponied up $25,000. The Minnesota Wild matched that $25,000 with $25,000 of their own for a total of $50,000 to send to Nashville for tornado relief and devastation relief and everything that's happened in our area. And the NHL said, you know what? We'll see that $50,000 and we'll throw in $50,000 of our own. So $100,000 coming this way to help out folks in time of need. Then that was not it. Then the Chicago Blackhawks jumped in and said, you know what? What do they call it? The 50-50?
Yeah.
Yep.
Which a lot of arenas had. I wish it was here. And I wonder, I meant to.
They have tried it from time to time.
I thought there was some legal issue of why they
couldn't. But I wonder if the new, if everything, the new game, is that going to change anything, you think?
I don't know.
Hmm.
It's a good question.
Because most arenas, you know, you go most of them have
in Canada,
the 50-50.
Everybody gets into it.
Yeah.
Big time. It's usually a big pot.
Braves have it. I mean, there's a lot of sports that do it. But you know,
so what it is whatever they raise that night, whatever many tickets, let's say the pot is they sold $50,000 in tickets. $25,000 goes to a winner that they pull out, like a raffle, and the other $25,000 goes to charity. And in this case, the Blackhawks last night after beating up on the Ducks, their charity was sending it this way, which was really cool. Really cool.
Chris Mason and Hal Gill, they put together that Guitar Picks and Hockey Sticks alumni weekend where they bring a lot of players.
Fantasy camp. Yeah.
And they raise a lot of money. I mean, they work extremely hard. People come from all over the continent, really, to come play in that thing. And they set aside $20,000 of what they raised last night for the relief fund. So another great thing. I mean, that's what you love about sports, how people rally together. Right, to help when somebody's down. It's great stuff. Great stuff. So one step at a time.
You've been showing us pictures in East Nashville where you live. We know East Nashville, 5 points, all that hit very, very hard. We talked about it for most of the show yesterday. We spent probably 85% of the show, 90% of the show talking about what's happened in our city. So now that you're back and you've seen it, and you really haven't had much time to really see it because the couple times coming in and coming out, you've been doing that in the middle of the night. But this morning, obviously, is the first time really in daylight.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it all, but I've seen enough. That's for sure, and pictures and everything. There's no words to describe when you see how a few streets on one side, you would never know anything happened. And then you get to where the storm really hit and concentrated on. And it's just totally devastation, right? It's total devastation. So what can you do about that? Well, you can rally together. That's the thing that was so heartwarming for me. When we touched down and I started, we left not knowing anything of that magnitude was coming. We didn't leave, Nashville heading for Minnesota thinking, fretting that, oh, man, when we land, what are we going to be in for? We were really surprised.
Well, we had no idea walking to the car Monday night. I even said it 3 or 4 times on postgame, but not knowing.
You knew it was going to be a bumpy night.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody really could foresee that something really, really bad. Like what happened was in store in a couple of hours.
So to land and find out that had been going on was shocking, of course. And then so you're spending the next few hours, you're trying to, touch base, call the people around you in your neighborhood. Are you okay? Are you okay? And then the next thing, once it gets to be about 6:30 in the morning, then you start getting your calls and text from your friends saying, are you guys all right? Yeah. And that was what was really heartwarming for me is just the human element of this. People that just know where we live, you see the news, East Nashville, where I know people in East Nashville, let's reach out to them. I just think that's great to just check in on people, and then how can we help? I'm offering this. What do you need? That's where it all starts, and then people put a plan together. The Predators, I know just in watching what they did yesterday and being informed as we were getting ready for our broadcast, they wanted to streamline because you have all these people that want to help. Right, they want to say, "Well, I would like to help. What can I do?" And then, you know, there's all these organizations, and they all mean the right thing. But they wanted to make a real simple streamline to say, okay, let's give a central area to donate, a central area to volunteer, and then we'll go from there.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's a plan, and it, you know, in less than 24 hours, you know, we're on our way, right? And what is going to be a long process of just step by step getting back and putting the pieces back together.
Sean Henry was on Morning Drive today, and I thought he said it best of when they asked him the question about things that they had done. They were feeding, you know, people yesterday at Bridgestone Arena, and he said, you know, when something like this happens, it shows you just how great our community is. Everybody just wants to immediately jump in and start helping and start doing something, but you have to take a step back and, you know, number one, not have that knee-jerk reaction. You need to plan. I mean, you need to have a plan together, and you also need to realize that moments after an event like that, the first responders are the ones that need to be there. They need to do their jobs. And so I thought that was very true. And now, you know, as the days pass, that's when this community can come together and start doing their things. And Hands on Nashville, we have a page set up at thegamenashville.com that you can go to, and it has links to everything that you can sign up to either donate or volunteer. But you know, that we all know that this city is going to come together and they're going to help one another. And I think that is what's so cool about it. And we're going to talk to Paul Wade, the head coach at DCA. You know, they were obviously hit very hard and devastated by their school being pretty much destroyed. And so we're going to talk to him. But, you know, this is where everybody comes together as a community, and you guys over in East Nashville. I mean, when it was all happening, Willie, I have a couple of friends that live over there, but, you know, that I knew where you were. You were on a plane.
Yeah.
But then I was like, hey, we're, you know, Aaron and the kids, are they okay? And so I'm reaching out to you and making sure, and, you know, just, you know, glad your family is safe. But, you know, thoughts and prayers continue for everybody affected.
No question. And I appreciate you. You were one, Chase, in the middle of the night. You're sending the text, Ryan Forth, a lot of you guys. We're doing that. I spent hours, I shouldn't say hours, but probably at least an hour just returning and thanking people for checking in on our family. And so we had no damage at our house. My parents' house, which is about 0.7 miles from us, had a gigantic tree get just pulled out of the ground. That's what happens with tornadoes. And this was a phenomenon in the 1998 tornado, which also hit East Nashville. The size of the trees that were just pulled up out of the ground, almost like you would pull a root out, you know, of your garden or something. It's just amazing the force of the wind there. And fortunately, the tree fell in a probably the best direction it could have. But you just see the size of that thing, and you think about just the magnitude of the storm there. But, you know, fortunately for all the people around us, even the ones that were hit, like we were checking on Kara Hammer from our staff. She lives in Germantown.
I talked to her that night.
Neighborhood was hit hard. She could feel the rumble, you know, windows being blown out. A lot of the apartments around, they lost power. So that's the first step, is just making sure everybody's all right. And, you know, for the most part, you know, you're going to rebuild this stuff, right? That's going to take some time, but the first thing you check on is everybody okay, you know? So it's a tough process here. Emotional.
We will come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Our weekly chat with Tim Hasselbeck coming up at high noon. We'll see how he's doing. We'll get into some NFL discussions with him. Chris Mason at 1 o'clock. We'll head over in the second hour and talk to DCA football coach. And we talked a lot about, unfortunately, their school, how hard it was hit. And I think really the question for this show and probably a lot of people listening that have had the same thing when we were talking about is, what do you do when that happens? I mean, how does that work?
Well, I know that
One day you go to school, the next day your school's gone.
Right.
How does that work?
So, you know, I'm obviously still close with Joe Dubin that, you know, we worked with for a long time at Channel 4, and he, you know, very active in the Donaldson community, and his son goes there, and so he's kept everyone up to date on what's going on. I think now they are trying to figure out what the next steps are. for their school. They want to finish the school year, and we'll get more information from Paul Wade when he joins us at 11:30. But, you know, the school is obviously closed right now, and they're going to try and – I think I saw that they were going to try and find another site, you know, off campus so they can finish the school year and then rebuild. But, look, it's devastating. When you see the video, you see the pictures of that campus, and I said this yesterday, Darren, I spent a lot of time there. The FRA played them. They were in the same division and still are. And so played football and basketball and softball. I mean, I spent a lot of time on that campus growing up, and so very familiar with it. And just to see the devastation is it's heart-wrenching. So, but again, you know, I heard somebody say last night when they interviewed one of the teachers on TV, thank goodness it was 1 a.m. and not 1 p.m.
Yep. And we said that yesterday. Thank goodness school wasn't in session. Holy cow. There's been a lot of closings, I noticed, today. And as we said yesterday, I mean, for a good portion, good stretch, I-40 was down in the Wilson County area. So they restored that back. I know you were talking earlier, East Nashville, they're working. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Obviously, they're trying to do everything they can to get back to some type of normalcy. I know the answer probably without even asking, but you probably haven't been able to venture to the Five Points area.
I've only seen it from sort of the perimeter. It's still hard to drive through. The traffic lights still aren't functioning, and they've got some areas roped off so they can just still clean up the rubble and the trees and the branches and all of those things. So, yeah, the Five Points area is it's the epicenter, really, of East Nashville with the small businesses and restaurants and hangouts. And so it's going to be a long process to get that back going. But they are working diligently over there. And I see a lot of people that it's their job to do that. And I see a lot of people that I know are just over there helping out, just walking over from wherever they live to help pick stuff up. You know, it's a great thing.
Speaking of that, if you would like to be a volunteer and help out, you can go to Hands On Nashville, which is HON.org, HON.org. I think I've heard already many times that they've had troubles with the site even staying up. And why? Because they've had so many people flood it. And you heard it yesterday in the press conference that we played with the mayor and the governor, and so many people have put that out there, put the word out about Hands On Nashville and HON.org, that they've at times had a hard time keeping it up because of so much traffic.
Which is great.
It's a great problem to have. Just tells you once again about our community. If you would like to just donate, you can go to the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee. And that website is cfmt.org, cfmt.org, to just simply donate. And we already told you what a lot of people have done. They've been raising a ton of money. And remember, this has been declared a state of emergency. That was done yesterday. And the president will be here on Friday. And you can only imagine from all this, you know, the footage that we've seen now to this point, what they're going to assess the total as. I couldn't even imagine what it's going to come to.
Yeah.
It's going to be a massive number to get, you know, to restore everything and to get everything back up. I mean, some of the I think it's one thing, Germantown and East Nashville, that is so, it's tough to see that. But, man, when you see the Mount Juliet. And,
yeah. And there's, and I just got
Putnam
the alert.
County and Cookeville, and it's like, holy yeah. cow.
Two
like,
schools.
You can barely tell that they weren't even neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Two schools in Wilson County won't open, you know, reopen this school year after the tornado damage. So, I mean, and that's what a lot of...
Will not reopen this school year?
This school yeah. year, yeah. I mean, they're going to have to essentially rebuild. And, you know, that's the thing. The buildings get knocked down, you rebuild. It's the loss of life that is so hard. And,
right.
You know, as the number, you know, we've heard the number, and we started off the show yesterday with 9, and it's risen. I believe the last I saw was 25.
I think that's the last number I've seen.
Which, I heard that yesterday afternoon, and that's what.
Well, we were reporting that yesterday while we were on the air, but there are a lot of people missing, and so I don't know.
But here's the positive in that. Last night, I think there were 70-something people missing in Putnam County, and that number has reduced drastically as people are they're putting names out there and people are being accounted for. So, you know, the thing that was so tough is I saw that five were under the age of 13, so you had some children. Yep. So, but it's not just in this area. It's not just in Nashville. Just that line was so long. I mean, that thing was on the ground, and I think they're still trying to figure out, was it one tornado? Did it go back up in the atmosphere and come back down? You know, what exactly happened? But you know, just an hour pretty much of this in one long line.
Yep. We will come back and start the second hour. We'll talk a little bit hockey, pick up where we left off earlier in hour number one. Also, we will head over to DCA in the second hour. Tim Hasselback at noon, Chris Mason at 1. Things on tap here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Wednesday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game.